Hi, my name's Bruce Nipon. I am the acting chair of the Allied Health Department at Delaware Technical and Community College in Dover, Delaware. I have been in EMS in some fashion or another since 1975. I've been an EMT since 1977, a paramedic since 1980. I've been teaching full-time since 1995, but have been involved in teaching in some manner or another, probably since the late 80s. So I've seen both sides of it. I've certainly experienced this just like every other EMT and paramedic. I've experienced this process as a student. I've experienced as a practitioner. I've experienced as an instructor. I began my career as a volunteer at a student volunteer ambulance service when I was in college, and began working as an EMT in 1978, and then worked for 12 years as a paramedic in New York before moving to Delaware, and then worked a few more years in Delaware, and then started teaching full-time. Because that sort of tell you a little bit about myself, how I arrived at where I am right now. Okay. I've worked as a volunteer. I've worked in hospital-based EMS. I've worked in third service EMS. I have not worked in fire service EMS, although as third service, I've interacted regularly with fire service EMS. So private and municipal, so I have a little bit of each of those perspectives, and hopefully what I'm going to say now about sort of lessons learned along the way won't be skewed from only one perspective. Okay, let's see. Lessons learned along the way. Probably the first most important lesson I ever learned was that and I'm going to clean it up a little bit. You can be nice and then rude, but you can't be rude and then nice. Okay. And what I mean by that is, if you come into a patient contact, or you come into any interaction, interagency or whatever it is, interaction with the public, and you come in with an attitude and you're rude, you've just slammed a door shut. And the rapport that you, if you're providing patient care, the rapport that you're going to have to establish with the patient and family members and bystanders and other agencies, you've just sabotaged that, okay? Because what everyone involved in that particular event is going to remember is that you started out rude, and then, unless you're really skilled at convincing people that that was a mistake, I didn't mean that, you may not overcome that, and you may find yourself really struggling to provide good patient care. The flip side of that is the goal is to always be nice. Okay, you can be nice, and people remember that you're nice, and that keeps the door open, because the door's open when you get there because people called for you. Okay. So you're keeping the door open by being nice, but sometimes circumstances take a bad turn, and you can become stern if you have to sort of maintain control of a situation. But nice is always is best, and starting out nice. That advice was very valuable to me, and I've always tried to live by that. Certainly start nice, okay?
Yeah.
I remember being interviewed for a job a number of years ago, and part of the interview process included a one-on-one assessment with a psychologist who asked about personal life and asked about professional life and so on. And it was interesting because I'd never really put it into words before until then. He asked me about, because I'd already been a paramedic for a while, he'd asked me about how I had adjusted to working as a paramedic. Okay.
From an EMT?
How did I emotionally adjust to this profession that allowed me to have any professional lifespan?
Right.
Okay. That I'd already exceeded what is sometimes viewed as a national average of, say, 5 years or 5 to 7 years. I'd already exceeded that.
Right.
So he wanted to know if I had a strategy or, how I, if I was keeping my head on straight, how I was keeping my head on straight. And I told him that early on in my career as a paramedic, I made judgments about whether something was my job or not. Why was someone calling for this? That's not what a paramedic does. It's not my job to do that. Why am I going to that call? It's not my job. Why are they calling for that? Why am I doing that? And suddenly, the light bulb went on. I could define my job however I wanted to define my job, however I was trained as a paramedic. That helped me define my job, or whatever my pre-existing beliefs were that caused me to define my job. If I'm doing something every day, it's my job. Whether I think that I should be doing that thing every day or not,
right.
Just by nature of the fact that it's happening every day, that's what my job is.
Right.
Okay, so I had to either not accept that and change jobs, or accept that and continue to do my job. I learned to accept that, okay? I learned to redefine what an emergency is, okay? An emergency is someone calling 911 because they need help. Mm-hmm. Medically, that isn't an emergency, right? But emotionally, that's an emergency. Right. So once I came to that realization, then I was fine with whatever type of call I went to. Someone had a personal emergency, whatever it was, and I was at the other end of the phone, so to speak, mm-hmm. who could come and help them sort out whatever their emergency was. Okay.
I heard a very similar thing in my field experience going through paramedic school was, mm-hmm. When someone who calls 911 has lost their ability to cope.
That's exactly right.
And that's for whatever reason, if it was like, they are having a bad day but for that particular person, they have run out of coping strategies.
That's exactly correct. That's exactly correct. In fact, I think sometimes when we talk about, that tends to come up in the curriculum when we talk about behavioral emergencies or psychiatric emergencies, mm-hmm. that it's a behavioral emergency when the behavior exceeds the ability of the people who are on scene to cope with that behavior, okay? But you're right. If you broaden the scope, if you broaden your perspective, it's an emergency when it's beyond the scope of the people on scene to deal with it,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we've probably at some point heard someone say, for a patient who's called 911 because, say, they have chest pain, we've probably at some point heard some provider say, that's not cardiac pain. Doesn't this guy know that? He's had this pain for a week. It's not heart pain. And my answer has always been, I'd like to think that it's always been, yeah, but he doesn't know.
Yeah,
it isn't cardiac pain. He didn't go to school to know that it isn't cardiac pain. That's why he called. Now we can, even if there's nothing that we can treat, even if it's assessment and transportation to the hospital, we can tell him it's okay. They really don't think it's your heart. Okay, so if that's what you're worried about, you can relax. And, so often there is very literally a sigh of relief on the part of the patient because that's what he or she was stressing about.
Yeah.
Okay. And still needs care. Maybe this patient has, a respiratory infection or something that certainly requires attention and requires treatment, but it's not as emergent as the patient may have thought it was. It's not as life-threatening as the patient may have thought it was, and that may have been what tipped that patient over the edge and made that patient unable to cope, like we were just talking about. And we have to understand that. And sometimes I think sometimes we lose sight of that.
Mm-hmm.
Expectations of the job. I think that we, as a profession, we've come, maybe the older providers have had realizations, and we bring that to the younger providers, that we can say, if your expectation of this job is that you're always responding to emergencies, life-threatening emergencies, that's not the case. That an overwhelming majority of your patient contacts are not going to be life-threatening emergencies. They will be, just as we mentioned before, they will be patients who just couldn't cope with whatever it was that was wrong with them that day. It may be something as simple as they have no means of transportation to get to the hospital. They know it's not life-threatening. They don't feel well. And they know they're not going to get better on their own, and they have no way to get to the hospital.
Right.
And we're their solution. Okay. And if you accept that, as I had to come to accept it early in my career, then you're happier, and you'll be happier in your job. Okay, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Being human, expectations of ourselves and expectations of others. Everyone makes mistakes. Okay, we worry about that as providers because we could make a mistake that could cause injury or could kill someone. Okay, and so there's always that worry that we'll make a mistake. I think you have to do the best you can and know that at some point everyone makes mistakes. We make little mistakes all the time. Hopefully we don't make many big mistakes, but we all make mistakes. And the best we can do, the most responsible that we can be, is to take ownership for the mistake, learn from the mistake, and try not to make the mistake again. Okay, that's why it's practice of medicine. We're practicing. We're still practicing.
Always practicing.
That's right. And also about being human. Having empathy for others, you know, caring about what happens to other people. We're in a service profession. We're in a caring profession. Okay, we take care of people because we want to take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that early, because there are so many things, technically and technologically. There are so many things that we're required to do as providers that it can be overwhelming to have to remember all the things that we have to remember and have to be able to perform all the tasks that we have to perform.
Yeah.
And then to be told by whomever, an instructor, a preceptor, a senior medic, whomever, that we have to show empathy. As new providers, our heads want to explode already with all the things that are in there. And now we have to be nice too, okay? And I think that what I want to say about that is it's easy to be nice. It's not an effort. It's not a struggle. It's just be nice. Be courteous to people. Talk to people the way you want to be talked to. Talk to people the way you would talk to a family member who's stressed out. And hopefully it's not like a sibling and you'd say, get over it. but truly, someone you care about,
mm-hmm.
you would show care. You would show concern. Okay. And I think that when you do that, it eases the patient's pain. Primarily, I think it eases the patient's pain. Selfishly, it makes your life easier.
Yeah.
If you can show caring, if you can show empathy for patients, then patients feel that, family members feel that, bystanders feel that, mm-hmm. and the barriers that could possibly go up don't go up. So it's easier to establish the rapport with the patient. It's easier to have someone comply with the request if you want them to do something for their care. Okay. So be human. Remember that you're invited. When someone calls 911 and you respond, especially if you imagine going into someone's home, you've been invited into their home. Okay. You don't own the home because they called 911. You're a guest. And if you behave the way a guest behaves, if you behave the way someone who's inviting, who's been invited into the home behaves, you tend to get along better with people who are there, even if they're stressed out and that's why they've called. Okay. I know you can't see the hand movements all the time. How do you keep your head on straight? If you're doing this job, if you imagine that you're going to do this career, if you think of this job as a career, and you imagine that you want to do this job for a long time, that you have passion for it, and you imagine yourself, if you can, 20 years from now doing this job, you have to have it be a part of your life and not your whole life. It can't be all-consuming. You have to have life outside of work. You have to have other interests. Things that can divert you, can distract you, can take your mind off your work. Otherwise, you can burn yourself out. You can burn yourself out with the best of intentions of wanting to do a good job. Mm-hmm. You can just emotionally exhaust yourself.
Yeah.
So I guess the last piece of advice I'd give is find something that you love that has nothing to do with EMS. Have passion for that thing too. And it helps you continue to have to maintain context, perspective on your EMS part of your life.
All right.
I hope that that's those little pieces of information.
Yeah.
Now I haven't lived this my whole life. That's mm-hmm. that's the thing is I made mistakes, and I stumbled and I learned things and people helped me along the way. So these are lessons that I've learned. I tell students all the time, I'm not your teacher because I'm perfect. I'm the teacher because I've made a lot of mistakes. And I can point out the landmines to you
right. And
help you avoid them so that you don't make the same mistakes that I made. Hopefully learn from the lessons without having suffered the penalties associated with the lessons learned.
Yeah.
I hope that sharing this part, the emotional part, the kind of interpersonal part is a help as well.
It is. I actually wanted to back you up.
All right.
To back towards what we first started talking about being nice.
Okay.
Before being rude.
Okay.
And I know one of the things that I dealt with was sort of developing that command voice. Mm-hmm. That when you did need to, you know, sort of get stern with a patient.
Okay.
Like, you know, talk to me a little bit about strategies for having to, you know, be stern, but then backing off again, you know, to otherwise, so you don't actually shut the door.
Okay. I think that, I heard someone once describe your demeanor, your goal for your demeanor on scene is to be a duck. You know what a duck does on water? It looks very calm, very serene on the surface, and what's it doing underneath?
Kicking.
It's paddling like crazy, okay? So I've also heard it described as being able to flick the switch, okay? So putting on your game face, okay? Learning a way to not look emotionless, but to not look scared.
Yeah.
Okay. Because patients are looking at your face. They're looking to read your face because they don't know how sick they are. And if you look scared, they're going to read that fear as perhaps that you're really worried about them because they're really, really sick. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that may be a very much a misinterpretation of your facial expression. So you have to be careful about the way that you look to the patient. Okay, and that comes, I think that just, that comes with practice. That comes with critique by your instructor, critique by your preceptors regarding the way that you looked. Okay. You looked like you weren't in control there. You looked like you were frazzled. Okay. And discussion about that. Well, why did, you know, you can ask a preceptor, why did mm-hmm. you think I looked that way?
Right.
Well, your eyes were kind of darting around and you broke into a sweat and, okay, well, maybe I need to take off a layer of clothing. I was trying to look for cues. Maybe mm-hmm. I need to do that in a different way so that it doesn't look like what you thought it was. Maybe that is the way I felt on the inside. Mm-hmm. I still need to find another way to do what I was doing so that I don't have that look,
right?
So that I don't frighten my patient. And not just my patient, but if let's say I'm the lead paramedic on a patient contact, and there are other personnel on scene, I may be the most highly trained medical person on scene, which means they may be looking to me for guidance on what needs to be done.
Right.
And they're all looking for my facial expressions too, because mm-hmm. they want to know if I'm in control or if I'm not in control. Okay.
Right.
And so I think that's a matter of practicing a game face and being given feedback on whether that game face works. Okay.
Yeah. And then another topic that you haven't hit on, but I think is very important to the profession, is the change. And things are changing in EMS all the time, and you've been around long enough. What have you done to deal with change? Because I know that I personally, you know, can have a real problem when things change.
Well, I think you first have to start with the mindset that it's a constant, right? That you have to expect that there will be change. And that it's hard work to change. I think that when there is change, you have to see you have to be able to see the benefit. The easiest way to accept change is to see the benefit of the change, and then you can buy into it more easily. Okay, mm-hmm. But we both know that sometimes we're going to see change that we don't think is good. Okay. And so I think that regarding change, you have to be able to identify what you can control and what you can't control. Okay, and that's throughout our profession. Mm-hmm. So if change is occurring, and you think that it's, for example, you think that it's not good change, and you feel that you can have an impact on affecting that change, then by all means, you should. Mm-hmm. It's a professional responsibility. But if you think that you can't have an impact, then you have to come to grips with it, that things change and some of those changes you cannot have an impact on. And if you dwell on it, you're going to burn yourself out and you won't be able to perform. And I think that also points to even on individual patient contacts, recognizing what you have an impact on and things that you don't have an impact on. You know, sometimes you can do the best job that you could have possibly done to help someone and they still have a bad outcome. And you have to accept that. You can debrief and you can critique and you can see if you really truly did the best you can. as I mentioned before, we make mistakes. The best we can do is do the best we can, learn from our mistakes, and then try to do better the next time. Okay. But even sometimes when we make our best possible effort, patient outcomes are bad. And if we're going to have any lifespan in this job, we have to accept that.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else you wanted to sort of bring me back to?
No, I hit all my things that I wanted. Okay. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, no. I'm going to wear you guys out if I keep talking.
All right.
All right. Nice talking with you guys.
Thanks.
All righty.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.